The following podcast is brought to you by Crosswinds Golf and Country Club, nestled between Rattlesnake Point and Mount Nemo on the Niagara Escarpment. Crosswinds offers 18 holes of championship golf with million-dollar views, actually $2 million views now. Outstanding conditions, and guess what? It's open to the public, too. And the rates are about half of what you'd pay in the big city. Just 45 minutes from downtown Toronto, Crosswinds is worth the drive to Burlington. I've been playing there for years and continue to go back because of the outstanding customer service and, of course, the beautifully manicured golf course. Hope to see you there soon. Go to crosswindsgolf.com. Lots of spring specials, pro shop specials, all kinds of stuff. crosswindsgolf.com for more information. And when you get there, remember, tell them Hebsy sent you. Now, Mike, let's begin the podcast. Hey there, sports fans. Welcome to Hebsy on Sports, episode 283. Today on the show, the Blue Jays lose a game they should have won, and I wonder aloud if Charlie Montoyo is good enough to outsmart managers like Terry Francona and Aaron Boone. Doesn't look like it. Didn't look like it last night anyway. The Toronto Maple Leafs go from world beaters to ordinary average guys in a matter of one game. One game! Now they have to get a split in Tampa. Can they do it? Yeah, if they stay out of the penalty box. Spezza for Simmons, maybe? You think? I think so. Look, this tough guy thing is not working. They're too good. Our guest today is Mike Johnson, who once played for the Toronto Maple Leafs and once played for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So who better to have a perspective on the series than Mike Johnson? The only problem is his name is Mike, right? And after seeing the Kids in the Hall documentary the other night, Dave's and Mike's, for crying out loud, we have too many Mike's. So he's going to be, we're going to call him Scarborough Mike for the purposes of this show. Is that all right?
Well, that's Mike Myers.
Oh, that's right. Shit, I forgot.
And I saw that's you right.
Mike Myers is Scarborough Mike. You're Toronto Mike. What are we going to do with Johnson?
And you were hanging with Mike Myers' brother the other day.
I was hanging with Paul Myers. Yeah.
Wow.
Waiting for his other brother, Peter Myers, to show up from Mississauga. Oh.
Okay.
Yeah, that was funny, actually. Standing outside, it's pouring rain, and I'm going, he says, I'm waiting for my brother. And of course, like, naturally, I could go, your brother, Mike, you're Mike Myers' brother. But I know, So I go, Peter, and he looks at me, goes, you know Peter? And I go, no, but I follow you on, on social media. I've seen pictures and all that. And he's explaining his brother to me, like, he's got less of a hairline than me. He's pulling his hair back.
Oh, yeah, okay. Dave's, a lot of Dave's, a lot of Mike's, but yeah. Let's face it, a lot of Mark's.
Yeah, but I was the first. And I'm Hebsy anyway. And Mark is like, could be with a C, a Mac,
That's true.
Yeah, back when I was a kid, my mom's sister, there was no other kids named Mark, like none. Oh. You were the first in the neighborhood. And it's true. I went back over my, classes, my school pictures and that, and there was like no other Mark. And when there was, it was like, hey, it was in junior high. That's right. Mark Pankey. Mark Napier was the first one. Hey. I went, hey, Mark with a K. He went, yeah. And I went, oh, Mark, that's it for that. Where was I? By the way, Mike, remind me of the story to ask Mike about the story about his first NHL road trip. Okay. Classic story. Mike Johnson's first NHL road trip. Getting on the plane. Also, I found an old interview with Guy Lafleur. And it got me thinking that with all the tributes and all the highlights and all the interviews with other people talking about Guy, we never heard Guy's voice, or at least I didn't. In all of those tributes, I did not hear the voice of Guy Lafleur. No interview clips of him speaking. And I loved Guy's voice. It was deep and it was resonant. And I remember him looking me in the eye when we did this interview that I'm going to play for you a little later. When he played, he wasn't a good interview. He just wasn't. He wasn't adept at talking with the media. He was adept at other things. He was very adept. But after he had retired and over the years, he just got better and better, at least with me and people he was comfortable with, because I knew him back when I was a reporter, but it was a different kind of a relationship. It was a business relationship. But in later years, he was much more relaxed. And if he knew you, he could be very thoughtful and very self-deprecating too. Funny. But self-deprecating too, which is funny to hear from a guy who was that great, who was idolized like a religious figure. Let's face it.
Yeah.
Be self-deprecating. It was really like, really? It was like he is making fun of himself. Anyway, five great minutes with Guy Lafleur from about 20 years ago, coming up a little later on. What did you think of the coverage, the funeral, all of it?
Oh, well, I didn't watch any of it, but I saw, you know, on Twitter, I saw photos. It looked like a state funeral. I'm guessing this is kind of a Quebec thing. Like, this wouldn't happen for, like, heaven forbid the great one ever passes away. But if Wayne Gretzky dies, it's not the same thing, right?
That's right.
This is a Quebec thing.
That's right.
Okay. So exactly. I was going to ask you what you thought of it, because you lived in Quebec.
The other one, Howie Morenz lied in states back in, 1937, I'm thinking. Different then. That was before the Quiet Revolution in Quebec in the 50s. But look, you're talking about Maurice Richard. You're talking about Jean Béliveau and Guy Lafleur. There's your holy trinity. There's the torch being passed down. Now, of course, there was Henri Richard, who was outstanding. There was Yvon Cornouaille, who's still alive. There are others in there, but really that's the one. There's Jacques Plante, but he ended up going and playing, with St. Louis too. And these guys were not only Montreal Canadiens, they were icons in the province of Quebec. And they made the Canadiens logo, the Canadiens mystique, what it was. All those Stanley Cups. And three very different types of people as well, and players. Béliveau was elegant. Rocket Richard was like a madman, like a scoring madman who could go off, like that. And Lafleur was, probably the most talented of them all, certainly as a goal scorer he was. But he was thrust into this, Jean Béliveau was already playing with Rocket Richard for a number of years. When Lafleur took over, when Lafleur was drafted, that was Béliveau's last year. I won't give too much away, because the way Guy explains it and explained it to me when I asked him about it was quite, quite interesting. We'll get to that.
Looking forward to that.
Cool stuff. All right. Let's get into some sports, shall we, Mike?
Lots baseball to talk about, Hebsy, man.
Blue Jays, man. Blue Jays have sort of been like the, the second cousins to the Leafs the last little while. And even the Raptors for a while there was like, oh, yeah, Blue Jays. Yeah, we'll get to them later. It's early. But this team is expected to win more than 91 games this year. Am I right, Mike?
Yes, well,
they're expected to win more than 91 games. The expectations are there, correct?
Yeah, 94, 95 this year. Let's do that.
Got to make the playoff. Must have a postseason game. Must have at least one postseason. Have to. So their 6-5 loss to the Cleveland Guardians was a study in futility last night. The inconsistent Jose Berrios threw 82 pitches over 4 2/3 with no strikeouts. Now, generally speaking, I couldn't care less about strikeouts. I get, but it meant that he didn't have good stuff, because you're going to get some whiffs if you've got your good stuff, right? But he had nothing. Allowed 8 hits and a walk, 6 earned runs. And that's just not going to do it. I'm sorry. That doesn't even make you a number 5 starter if you're going to be giving up hits like that. And hard hit balls too. Not tweeners and banjo hits and Punch and Judy shots.
Ooh.
By the way, last night's outfield consisted of Raimel Tapia leading off and playing right field. He went 0-5. Bradley Zimmer batting, and he weighs less than my cat, okay, which I don't have anymore. Bradley Zimmer is like, he's awful, okay? He's playing center field. Not George Springer, got to have a maintenance day for George, right? But he's on the bench. We'll get to that in a minute. And it's painfully obvious that neither of them can replace Teoscar Hernandez, who had better be on his way to Cleveland right now, on a flight right now, okay? After hitting a home run in Dunedin yesterday. Oh, he's ready. Let's go. Because Lord knows, the Blue Jays need him, and they need him now. Because even though it's, quote, early, you're fading behind the Yankees, and now Tampa's ahead of you, too. Don't look now. Time to run off a winning streak. Now, Vladdy got us on the board with a 2-run bomb in the first. Beautiful. But the Guardians scored 2 in the third, 1 in the fourth, 2 more in the fifth to chase Berrios. The beauty here is we know that the Blue Jays can come back. Down 4 runs? No problem. It's only the fifth, sixth inning. Come on. Even the set, come on, we can do that. And that's what happened, almost. Okay? Because we're down 6-2, but we battle back in the sixth. Zach Collins, a 2-run double. Now it's 6-4. And then Alejandro Kirk, who they've been saying all along, okay? This is when I like it when they break the jinx. Has not had a home run this year. Right. One extra base hit all year for Alejandro. It's nothing but singled out. Surprise, Alejandro Kirk. But he hits the ball hard, but he hits the ball on the ground, and he's like a singles hitter. Boom, Jack's his first home run of the year. Hello, 6-5. Okay, now this is when it's up to the manager. This is what you pay the manager for. This is what a good manager does. A good manager immediately says, he's thinking ahead and he's like, all right, we got to tie the game before we win it, but we got to tie it. And how do we do that? So what happens is in the eighth inning with two outs, Santiago Espinal hits a single. And immediately I go, get Springer up there. He has to hit now. You got me? George Springer's got to hit right now. Let me adjust this screen here. George Springer had to hit there. And here's why. To wait for him to come up down a run in the ninth and hope that he hits a home run or an extra base hit or something like that is asking a lot, because Cleveland's going to bring in their big reliever, Emmanuel Clase, okay, who is tough. He's one tough mother. You would rather have George Springer come up with a man on base with two outs, because that way Espinal is running as soon as the ball's hit. There's two outs. He's running, which means any ball hit in the gap, anything like that, Espinal can score the tying run. This is your best chance right now to tie the game. Right now. Springer's sitting on the bench. Kirk is the batter. Kirk hit a home run his last at bat. Oh, that's good. Kirk's been hitting the ball hard. That's good. But Kirk is a singles hitter. All right? He's not a gap hitter. He's not a home run hitter like George Springer, who's sitting on the bench. Perfectly healthy. This is what you pay a guy for. The other thing is, you want Springer hitting against the reliever, Brian Shaw. Has Springer got a good record against Brian Shaw? Yeah. Yeah. 2-for-7 with an extra base hit. That's good. That's all right. 286. I'll take 286 right there with Springer for sure. But no, he's on the bench. He's on the bench because Montoyo's already decided that he's going to replace Zimmer with Springer in the ninth. Bad move. So what happens is Kirk hits the ball on the ground to the second baseman, and Springer is sitting on the bench watching this happen. And I'm going, Montoyo fucked it up. I'm not saying Springer would have got a hit and we would have tied the game and eventually, I don't know, but you've got a much better chance of with Springer up there with a man on of getting an extra base hit to tie the game than you are with Alejandro Kirk. All right. Simple as that. And even if Kirk does hit the ball on the ground and it goes through, then Springer's still got to come up, right? You know, you still got to have three straight hits. That's asking a lot. Put your best guy up there if you've got a chance, especially against a relief pitcher that you know he can hit against. And Francona didn't have Clase up in the bullpen. And Francona's smart, because I guarantee you, if he sees Springer coming to the plate, he gets the reliever, he gets Clase ready to go in the bullpen. He goes out to the mound for a chit-chat, right, which he's got five left. Nice little chit-chat, gets the guy up and warming and says, look, if you don't get this guy, we're in trouble. But I think if Charlie pinch hits right there with Springer, we've got a chance to tie the game. And we didn't have a chance there. So I blame Charlie for not putting Springer in.
And Hebsy, you're 100% sure that Springer was feeling 100% himself, A-OK, because
yep,
when he went all out, he made a great catch in the field the other day. And, he always goes 110%, which is not possible, but he does it. And I get tweets every time he does it. Like, is Hebsy okay with him going so hard? Because you're worried about his fragility.
You get tweets. What does that mean?
People tweet at me.
People tweet at you.
Yeah, I get tweets.
To ask if I'm okay with Springer diving to make a catch.
Right.
What does that mean?
Because you've been on the record as you feel that he tries so hard and then he hurts himself. And you don't want to see him trying so hard in the outfield, I'm talking about, because then he hurts himself and can't help us at the plate. You're a Hebsy man. Am I misinterpreting your thoughts?
No, you were there when that happened. But that was last year, and that was some of the reckless things that I thought he had done that he didn't have to do, right?
Right.
And so far this year, he hasn't been injured to any degree.
Okay.
But your suggestion that, like, what, he was he okay? Well, of course he was. He batted in the ninth inning.
Right. But maybe giving him a true day off, like an absolute true day off, like he got here from Montoyo, is to preserve his, well-being so he can continue to help us down the stretch.
Look, if you're going to pinch hit the dude, what's the difference if you pinch it in the eighth or in the ninth? Right. What's the difference? Right. But man, to have him sitting there, sitting there with, like, the tying run at first base. George Springer got 11 extra base hits this year.
Right.
Better chance? Right. Definitely.
Oh, yes. No, absolutely.
And while I'm at it, the Jays, I don't know if they're going to actually ban the shift. They're talking about maybe next year that you ban it. You have to have two infielders to the left of second base. But I think really that the Blue Jays, they overthink things too much. this defensive alignment has hurt them a few times because on the pivot, Matt Chapman, the third baseman, is the guy that's got to come across and make the play. And he's not used to that play. That's a shortstop's play. Right. And Bo seems to be out of position a lot of times on these shifts. Here's the thing. There was a situation in the fourth inning. And if you're not a baseball geek like me, you know, go ahead and walk the dog.
They wouldn't dare.
Okay, but let me explain this to you as someone who loves the game, knows the game, understands the game, probably more than you. When you put a shift in and you bring all the infielders pretty much to the right side of second base, you want to pitch the ball on the inner half of the plate so that the batter hits the ball into the shift, right? You don't want to throw a pitch on the outside corner so that the batter can flare it out towards left field where there's nobody, right? There's nobody. So what they did was the Jays, they figured with, I think Jimenez was the batter. Yeah. So they, okay, let's shift everybody all the way over. Let's put Bo on the second base side of second, not the shortstop side. And let's have Chapman as our only guy over there. And even he is shaded closer to the bag, right? And what happens is they Jimenez flips one out to left field, which would have been a one hopper for Bo Bichette to start a double play if they're in the regular defensive alignment. Seriously, he's in double play, but the ball's right at him. Okay. It's a soft liner kind of a thing. It's a bang. It's 6-4-3 double play. You're out of the inning. But instead, you got Bo playing way over there. You got Matt Chapman having to break for second base because remember, there's a runner at first. Okay, and he has to break towards the bag. He's got to take the if it's a ground ball to an infielder, he has to be at the bag to take the relay and then get it onto first base for the double play. It wouldn't have been a six, it would have been a 5-4-3 double play. Or no, Christ, what would it have been? I don't know. It might have been a 5-3 double play. It might have been right to Chapman and he runs right to the bag, steps on the bag and throws the first. But no, you can't have that because he's breaking towards the bag. And as he's breaking towards the bag, the ball is hit right where he should have, would have been. But for sure, right where Bo Bichette would have been in a natural situation. That's just, it's bad baseball. You got to have good defense. You got to have good base running. You got to have all that, as well as timely hitting, which the Jays just haven't had. Like a Bo Bichette gets 3 singles last night. But when they really needed him, when they really, really needed him, with runners second and third and one out, he pops up. Now, it was a great at bat. He fouled off a whack of pitches and all that, but still, come on. You got to get those hits. Am I right, Mike?
You got to bat 1,000 for Hebsy if he's your manager.
No, okay? That's not it. It's great. You know, it's great. Oh, he's back. He's 3-for-3. Yeah, but when we really, we needed.
He was like 11 for his last 22.
We needed a fly ball to the outfield. That's what we needed there. That's what we didn't get. Anyway, Jason, third place, 3 back of the Yankees, half game back of Tampa. And that's the other thing. Kevin Cash is also a better manager than Charlie Montoya. You see, Charlie's got to get better. You got to get better in game.
Of course, Kevin. Of course, he's a better manager than Montoya because you're a better manager than Charlie Montoya.
No, I'm not a better manager. I don't know. I'm not. But maybe Charlie's just great in the clubhouse and they love him. And I think he deferred to Kirk. I think it was like, I didn't want to hurt Kirky's feelings. He had just hit a home run, right? I didn't want to hurt his feelings. So I put him up there. But, you know, sometimes you got to go, you know, Kirky, come over here. I got Springer over there. He makes $29 million a year. His job is to drive in runs and win games. I'm sorry, Kirky. You're going to have to sit. You think Charlie was worried that he was going to hurt Kirk's feelings? Don't worry, Kirk. We'll have Springer MVP. Lead off the ninth against MVP. A tough reliever. Don't you worry about it. Anyway, did you notice last night on the broadcast, the irony of the broadcasters, the irony of Ben Wagner, who would have been sitting at home in a studio in Toronto, calling the game for audio, unable to go to Cleveland because they don't send Ben on the road. But instead, hey, Ben, yeah, listen, Dan Schulman is in COVID protocol. Scott Carson, the third man in the booth, is in COVID protocol. Do you think that you could go to Cleveland and call the game on TV? Which will simulcast on radio, you and Pat Tablet. You go to Cleveland, sir. Okay, yeah. So this is how Ben Wagner gets to do the games on the road. This is how it happens. Right. Injuries, okay? The depth chart at Rogers Baseball is like, holy shit, what's going on here? Like, think about that depth chart there.
Well, you know who they could take off the bench? Jamie Campbell. He's called a game or two. But then again, he probably can't. Maybe he's getting treatment and he can't leave the city. So there's that whole dynamic too.
Siddle, what about Siddle? I mean, Joe is in the studio. He's doing play. He's doing color with Dan. Now he's not doing color. Is Joe in COVID protocol? Because Joe was sitting near Dan and Scott. He was in the booth with those two guys, right?
Right.
Tabler was also in the booth with those two guys, but Tabby's okay because he was doing the game last night, but he's on the other side of Shulman. So Shulman and Carson are together. So who did they, like, what's going on? Anyway, it's not like
you got to call up Wilner. Get Wilner over there.
No. All I'm saying to you is that you have to take precautions and contact tracing. And I went through it at Hot Docs. Like you get a phone call, you get a text. You were in contact with someone who tested positive. Hey. Please take a rapid test. Please take a test.
Yeah, please test. Were you at the Tom Wilson doc?
I wasn't at the Tom Wilson doc, but I know people who were there and they got the text. They got the call. Go out and get tested.
I'm just wondering if it's good because, I mean, his story is so amazing, as you know. I just wonder how the doc is. But okay, I'll find him.
Right. Tonight, a great pitching matchup. We've got Kevin Gausman against Shane Bieber, Ben Wagner, and Pat Tabler on the call again.
Okay. Hey. Quick note, though, from your live stream on YouTube, and everybody should watch us live on YouTube. Moose Grumpy says Ben Wagner was not in Cleveland. He called it from the T-dot.
What? And Pat Tabler was in Cleveland? Come on. I got to have confirmation.
There's always a delay, right?
I got to have confirmation here. Was anybody at the ballpark?
But how did you know Ben was in Cleveland? You made, right?
Who else would be in Cleveland?
Yeah, like, but he could call it from a screen in Toronto.
Well, where was Pat?
He was on first. We'll find out for you.
Well, that's great, Moose Grumpy. Thanks, but find out for me. Is that an actual fact? Ben was actually doing the game.
Yeah,
he's doing tonight's game from there as well.
Moose would never say that.
So he's doing the whole series from here. So we have no boots on the ground because I saw a rash standing on the field in Cleveland. You're telling me he's the only one of the crew that's there?
So Moose says yes. So Moose, I'm assuming you're saying yes. Pat was there and Ben
and Rash was there.
And Rash Ben was in Toronto.
But Ben was in Toronto.
Right.
Well, see, my apologies.
Just don't want to offend him.
Wow. I just assumed that you had one. So Pat was there in the booth by himself.
Yep. Tabby's in Cleveland, Ben in Toronto. Confirmed by my correspondent, FOTM Moose Grumpy.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Excellent. All right. Well, good to know. Wow. Well, that's the story right there. That's for next week's show. We're going to get into hockey in a few minutes. Mike Johnson's going to join us. I want to get into the NBA playoffs. Even though the Raptors are out, there's some real drama happening on the hard court. These playoffs are really good. There's some really great players. You know, LeBron's not part of it, man. Kawhi's not part of it, man. And Joel Embiid is not part of it. He got hurt in that last game against Toronto. He got his face smushed. He's got some facial issues to deal with. And Philly's down 2-2 love to Miami, heading into game 3 tonight in Philadelphia. So it was the Raptors, really. So you like to see that. If the Raptors went down, you want to see that they did some damage to Philadelphia, right? More than a few bruised egos there. So Philly and tough against Miami. Miami's a good team. Other matchup tonight is the Phoenix Suns up 2-love in Dallas to take on the Mavericks. Tomorrow, we got Milwaukee hosting Boston. That series is 1-1. That's a good series. There's some high-level basketball being played there. Very, very exciting. Remember, Milwaukee, the defending champion. But Boston got a great team as well. And the Memphis Grizzlies. Think about this. Vancouver against Golden State. It could have been that. Could have been the Vancouver Grizzlies with Ja Morant against Golden State, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Splash Brothers. But no, they moved to Memphis how many years ago now?
Long time ago now.
100 years ago now. They've been in Memphis. Anyway, good for them. I like that squad. That series tied 1-1. Very exciting stuff.
Hey, you skipped a story in baseball I was going to ask you about because they made a lot of like big PR noise about the young man who got the ball.
I would have done the same thing. So would you.
But no brainer.
You would have
right?
done the same thing, Mike. Yeah. You would have done the same.
No, I'm agreeing with
you. You would have. As a father, you would have kids behind you with the judge.
Is there an adult who's there without a kid? Because the only time I've ever got a game ball, which was a foul ball, I handed it right away to a 3-year-old, but that was my boy. But still, if there's a kid, that's a slam dunk no-brainer. No adult keeps a ball when there's a kid.
Not only that, the guy didn't even catch the ball. Like, you know, it bounced in front and he picked it up. And as soon as he picked it up, he went because he had said to the kid earlier, we're going to get you a ball. He had said to the kid, get the ball. Right. And the kid just, you know, the beauty of it was just the kid's reaction. He just burst into tears.
Right.
The way I would have burst into tears had somebody handed me a ball that Willie Mays had just hit it. Like that. to me, the story just got to be a bit too much. The next day was when everybody in the media, descended upon the kid and Aaron Judge.
Right.
And there was one beautiful picture by Rick Madonic of the Toronto Star, who's a fantastic photographer, where he said, okay, I'm going to get a shot here, a tender moment between these two. And in the background is the waiting mob with their cameras. Right. But far enough in the background where Rick gets this beautiful from the other side of the dugout, the perspective was beautiful. And that was the nice part of the story. The kid got to meet Aaron Judge, and Aaron Judge is very cool about it. That's great. But to have everybody there,
right,
just kind of, if I'm the kid, I'm nervous already, man.
It's a feel good story. So
it is a feel good story. But it's the thing is, yeah, it makes us all feel good. Right.
Yeah.
I'm worried about the kid.
No, the kid got to meet his hero. Everybody. Hey, quick though, I know you got to move on from, but baseball, everybody loves to talk baseball. Craig Miller wants you to know, what's your thoughts on the umpires? He says that confrontation with, Bumgarner.
Oh my God, the umpires. What was that about? Oh my God, it's gotten to be, let's go for the robo umps already. This is becoming too much. There was a tag play in the Jays game last night. Okay, he obviously tagged him. They all went to run off the field. And everybody said, no, hang on a second. The ump called him safe. I said, the ump is right there. He's 3 feet away. If you're 3 feet away and you can't see a guy tagging another guy on the shoulder, and I'm not talking about brushing up against, his jersey where there's a little brush up. Not at all. That was just ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Okay, listen, I want to play this clip, okay? Guy Lafleur, I covered him for a couple seasons when I was in Montreal. Mike Johnson's joining us in just a second here. Mike played in Montreal, played in Toronto, knows about Guy Lafleur. So this interview is from about 20 years ago. It was an old timers event or something like that, with a legends event. And I spotted him and I'm Guy, and he's like, hey, Mark, he remembered my name, which right off the bat, you're going, he remembered me. He remembered the time I interviewed him a few times. So we went off into a corner and anyway, Mike, go ahead and roll the tape there.
He had the first time you ever put on a Montreal Canadiens uniform. What do you remember about that?
Well, I was really impressed because it was in 1971-72 when I first joined the organization. So walking into the room of the forum and thinking about all the players that played for this organization before, and I was very shy, and I was really impressed. It was a great, great honor for me.
You had a special relationship with Jean Béliveau. You never played with him, but he was a mentor to you, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He was my idol when I was a kid, and in training camp, I live at his place for 2 weeks before I find an apartment, and it was very special, something very special to sit down for breakfast in the morning, and I didn't talk much at that time. I was too impressed, and he gave me some great, gave me some great things, like he was saying, well, just play your game and don't put too much pressure on yourself, things like that. But you listen. I was listening a lot when he was talking, but when I was getting to the dressing room, I was so nervous, afraid not to make it or maybe getting injured, things like that. So it's different.
Do you think anyone outside of the province of Quebec can understand the pressure that you were under as a young man, being the first pick by Montreal, trying to continue the legacy? How difficult was it? Were there times where you thought that you might want to quit or that you weren't going to be good enough?
No, I didn't think about quitting or things like that. But the thing is, the team had a great team. Team was doing well at the time, and Jean Béliveau just had retired, and I came in. So in the people's mind, I was replacing Jean Béliveau, but with the Montreal organization, the first 3 years, I was not playing regularly. So it's tough to play well and get mentally prepared for the game when you know that you're going to play tonight and you won't be playing much. So that was tougher than what was the people was expecting from me, to replace Jean Béliveau. But you look at guys who played before, Yvan Cournoyer, he played on the bench for 3 years, and even Réjean Aho, Marc Tardif, and even Steve, when I was playing, when he first came in, he was not playing regularly. So that was their mentality, and that you had to go through that. And you look back, and the team was doing so well and the team was so strong, so it was tough to make the lineup.
Ken Dryden, Steve Schott, a lot of guys have told me that the Montreal dressing room was a special place to be, certainly when you were winning, but it was a fun place because there were a lot of guys that liked to play jokes on other guys. Yeah. Who was the biggest jokester?
Well, Guy Lapointe was a great jokester. Jimmy Roberts, Pete Mahovlich. A lot of guys, you know, Serge Savard, and we had so much fun. It was like a big family, you know, if you go back, and the team was pulling as a unit. Everybody was trying to keep up the dynasty, what the other guys did in the past who played before us. So it was just a question of being very proud about the organization, about ourselves, and the jersey that we were wearing every night. So we said, well, I said, let's do it for ourselves and do it for the public, and we're going to have fun out there and going to be winning too.
Dryden told me that the first game he ever played before his first game, they pulled a prank on him where they told him that there was an extra ice cream to be eaten and it was really sour cream with chocolate sauce. Was there a story that where they pulled a prank on you and in your first couple of years where the veterans decided they were going to make Guy Lafleur a part of the team?
Well, they had the initiation at the time, so everybody went through that. I don't know too many guys who really liked it, but you had to go through that to be part of the team, I think, and it was just a question of that the guys go through the same thing, you know, and to be accepted by the players. After that, we had all kinds of jokes that players were making, things like that, but you would insert a phone, they would put Vaseline on the at the end there, so all kinds of stuff like that, so or cut your ties and when you were sleeping and on the plane, and we did all kinds of stuff.
Robinson was a jokester too?
Larry? Oh yeah, he was with Guy Lapointe, and but guys didn't do anything. They were respectful between each other. Except some of the guys didn't take the jokes, but that was part of the game.
That's great. I appreciate it.
There you go. That's Guy Lafleur from the early 2000s. That voice, though. Mike Johnson joins us now on the show, former Montreal Canadian. Did you get to meet Guy Lafleur ever, Mike?
I did. I was fortunate. One of the very my first day as a Montreal Canadian, before the season start, they have their charity golf tournament.
Right.
So it was my, like, I hadn't been to media day, nothing. It's like a week before. It's optional, not really. So I show up, and on that day, I met him. Yeah, he came with, and he's great. He kind of knew who I was a little bit. We talked for 10 or 15 minutes, and this is my indoctrination in Montreal. And it was really something, because I found it to be true the whole year. I was just there 1 year, but I wish it was longer, in that they did a great job, and maybe because they had such famous, well-respected, legendary names and successes, that, like, you felt the weight of the history of that franchise right away. And that's what I took away from my chat with Guy, is like, one, he was not afraid to tell you how he feels about anything, like good or bad, like he'll let you know team's no good, you're no good, power plays this, whatever. But how much he genuinely cared about the Montreal Canadiens and their success and the city of Montreal and the fans, all of it. It's just kind of the passion kind of oozed out of them. I was fortunate. I met him a few times that year, and it was always a pleasure.
Yeah. Mike, I have to mention too that Toronto Mike, my co-host here, he's got the moniker Toronto Mike. Mike Myers has the Scarborough Mike. He's had that for years. So, like, where do you fall? It's just like, what do we call you? MJ? Like, you know, Johnny? They call you that on overtime? What works for you?
Yeah, like, you got all my hockey nicknames taken care of right there. It's MJ, it's Johnny. Now, if he's Toronto Mike and Mike Myers is Scarborough Mike, and I think Mike Myers might have gone to the same high school as me for a day or two. Sir John A. McDonald, or and then we went to Leacock maybe as well, which is where you can call me Agent Court Mike, which is another little borough inside Toronto that I grew up in where I was a little kid. But yeah, Johnny or MJ, hockey players are not overly creative with what we call each other, so
no kidding.
Any of those things work.
Well, let's ask Toronto Mike, is that permissible? Is
I
Agent
actually,
Court Mike good?
I like it when you go like down to the neighborhood level. I think Agent Court Mike is perfect. So pleasure to meet you, Agent Court Mike.
Yeah, pleasure to meet you. I know who you are and listen up and whatever. So it's good to be on. Now, not as long as I've known Hebsy, because I've told him this before. Like, I grew up in Agent Court, and back then, when I was growing up, there were no sports channels, right? Like, they started when I was, I don't know, probably a teenager or something. So the place to go for your sports fix, and I was a little sports nut kid as a child, was Hebsy. And then, like, the Hebsies on the weekend, like, I would tape that on a VCR tape to watch.
You still got those
back,
tapes, so. By the way? If you have the tapes, send them to me, because I could use
them. Oh, my gosh. Well, you know what? I probably had them about whenever my parents moved from their house in Agent Court to somewhere in North Toronto. And as they were moving, they had boxes and boxes of videotapes and National Geographic. And I think they probably got rid of both. But they, like, all, like, tapes of us playing sports as kids, tapes of whatever. Yeah, but I think it's just for space purposes, but I don't know if I have any more kicking around.
All right. How big a family was yours?
Just me and my sister. I have a sister who's a couple years older. She was the true athletic star of the family. She
really?
Played almost at a national level with soccer. She went down to Florida on a soccer scholarship back in, you know, the early 90s when that was not quite as normal as it is now. So, yeah, she was still is, like, by far the best athlete I've ever met. Like, just... She was at the end of the year. This is what I was dealing with when I walked in grade 9 and 10 at Mac. She was athlete of the year in 6 different sports when there's only 3 seasons. Like, I don't even know how that works. So
6 different sports. And you had to follow this legend into high school.
I'm JJ's little brother. Yeah, I'm Jay's little brother. So Jennifer. I'm Jennifer's little brother. Yeah. So I was like, don't mind me. I played hockey at one point. But yeah, so... Yeah, she was, and the funny thing is, I was always the academic, and she was always the athlete, and I turned out playing sports for a living, and she's a teacher. So, what are you gonna do?
That's pretty funny. And so, you grew up a Leaf fan?
I suppose when I was little, I mean, I remember vividly. I played for the Toronto Marlies, which is, you know, the minor hockey organization in Toronto, and once a month, we got to practice at the Garden. I remember these when I was maybe, I don't know, 9 or 10 years old. And it was like 8 in the morning on a Saturday. So my dad and I would drive down and we'd park in some sketchy place by a Harvey's, and everyone from Toronto knows where that is, at like 6 in the morning, and there'd be sketchy people there. And like, I would shuffle quickly, be like, come on, Mike, let's get inside the building. And we would go and we would run around the bottom of the Garden and find wrestling rings and horse around. And we'd go on the ice at like 7 a.m. before the lights were even on, just to kind of feel what it was like to skate there. It was really kind of special moments that you got to experience. And we got to, I remember Builder Lego, who I know now as a fellow Maple Leaf alumni.
Yeah.
And like, he would come out getting ready for his morning skate. And he'd be like watching us sitting on the bench, watching these young little 10-year-olds rip around. And so he would come out on the ice and like pass the puck with us. And I think I was supposed to be the fastest skater on my team at that point. So my coach challenged him to race me around the ice, and he did. And yeah, it was awesome. So I guess for those moments, I grew up a Leaf fan, but I stopped playing hockey in high school. So I didn't follow the Leafs. I was a Chicago Bulls fan. I was a Michael Jordan guy. Like, that was my man. And so I was far more into basketball than I was into hockey when I was in my teenage years.
So do you like it when people say, well, there's Mike Johnson, he's the hockey expert, we're going to hear hockey, he's going to talk hockey, 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 when you and I both know that talking all kinds of, when you're a sports fan and you love all sports, you want to talk about Champions League, you want to talk about the Kentucky Derby, you want, you know, all that stuff.
Don't get me started on F1 right now. Like, do not get me started.
Miami, listen, the tickets are $1,300, okay? It's the Miami Grand Prix. They're going to spend more money down there this weekend than they did for the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. It's fantastic. I love it.
Amazing. I love it. And amazing what the power of that Netflix show and what it's done for that sport in North America. Not in Europe. In Europe, it's always been a kind of a phenomenon. Right. But in North America, not at all. And the reason why Miami has a race, the reason why Vegas is going to have a race, is because it's crazy the power of that show. But yeah, you want to talk about the new front wing package on the Mercedes car? Like, yes. I want to talk about all those things. I like talk about Ja Morant. But I also appreciate my unique position of not only having played in passionate hockey markets and growing up in Toronto, still living in Toronto, and how much people care. Like, people care a lot. So yeah, like, even close friends, like my best friends, can't help themselves in the playoffs. Like, they'll call me up, like, Johnny, are they going to be able to win this year? And I'm like, I don't know, but like they love it. People love it in Toronto, and it's part of what makes it a special place to be involved with hockey.
Toronto, Mike, do you have any questions for Agent Court, Mike?
Well, just, man, I guess I would love to know what it was like playing in Germany. Because, you know, after your NHL career, you go to Germany for a spell. Like, what is that? How does that compare? I'm dying to know.
So, well, how much time do we have? Yeah, no, it was not
We
great.
Got 20 minutes, and then you got to go and do your one of your 17 jobs that you get paid for.
Right.
There you go. He is exactly right. I went there, and I'd hurt my shoulder my last year. I didn't play the full year in St. Louis, so I spent the summer rehabbing. And Todd Warner, one of my good friends, who I played in Toronto and Tampa and Phoenix with, was over there at the end of his career. And he's like, come on over. It's great. They treat you well. Cologne's a beautiful city. It's very cosmopolitan city. I had young children, but they had an English school for them to go to. It was like a great setup. And like, you know, just to kind of play one more year and have some fun and see the world and have an experience. But it was the year of the financial meltdown in the fall there. And so everybody in the world was hurting financially, including the owner of my supposedly very solvent and team. And as we got along and like we got off to a bit of a slow start or something, and they fired the English speaking coach right away. They brought another, and then they fired that guy, and they brought another German coach. And I think basically what their objective was by November was to try to get the higher paid import players to quit. So, because they were having a hard time paying us.
Right.
And so I had a hard time not getting paid on time, which, you know, I guess sometimes in Europe, these things kind of happen, but I'm like, hang on. If I'm supposed to get paid on like, whatever, October 31st, it's November 10th. Like, I don't want to do a three a day. I don't want to do a fan signing. Like, I want to get paid, like pay me or like stop asking me to practice three times a day. So I probably didn't have the best attitude about it either. And then there were games in December. I remember sitting there and whatever. I wasn't as good as I once was, but I was certainly good enough to play in the German league. And like, they would be playing kids from their junior team, and I would not play a shift in the period. And I'd be like, what is going on here? So they were trying to get us to leave. And so we lasted till about January, and then we terminated our arrangement, our relationship with each other. So it was a neat life experience. My kids going to school there, and, you know, we got to travel around Europe a little bit. But the other part about it, and for people think, well, it's not a European vacation. To like those players, to that league, it is as serious and as important as the NHL. They train just as hard. The games matter just as much. So it's not like, oh yeah, I'm going to 2 days here. I'm going to jet over to Amsterdam and you know, whatever. You have a job. It's just like the NHL without the good perks.
Interesting. How long from the time that you ended your hockey career till broadcasting came along?
So I left Germany in January 5th or whatever it was. I had the summer of George, summer of Mike, and I just played golf 1,000 times and whatever. But by the time fall came around, I'm like, there's only so much CrossFit tennis I can do. Like, I got to go do something with my brain. So I have a degree in finance. I went, started getting certified again to go to work in finance, which is what I always planned on doing. And as I got a job and I was getting certified and I was going to start November 1st, and I was excited to try a different thing. And as I was waiting to do that, I got a call on a Friday night in October saying, hey, we have a radio show tomorrow. Can you do it? I'm like, okay, first of all, who canceled? Because it's 11 p.m. and the show is in 10 hours. So what? But it was, I think it was Darren Dreger who was supposed to do it, and he couldn't. And Rod Black, great Blackie, was the host, one of the best. And so I think Dreg's like, why don't you call us Mike Johnson? He did a couple things for us. I think he's kicking around Toronto. So I did that, and that radio show led into the next week's radio show, which led into the Sirius XM show, which I still kind of do. I'm doing at 10 o'clock right now, which led into NHL Network TV in Scarborough, and then TSN building was shared with NHL Network, and I was just kind of there. And all of a sudden, I'm like, you know what? I put off my financial starts because I was just doing this for a minute, and that was it. And I was off and running. And then, but you know, over the course of that year, you know, you do the odd that hockey thing, and I was trying to get on the World Championship studio panels. And then, you know, Dave Reed got the general manager job at the Peterborough Pete, so he didn't call the game. So I got parachuted into Germany to call games, which I'd never done before. I didn't know what I was doing, but it was a last minute. And then, you know, here I am, whatever it is, 13 years later, and it's it's an all-consuming job, which I am I'm fortunate to have.
Yeah, you're really polished as a broadcaster now too, because you did at, when you did the CBC Olympics hockey for CBC, you're sitting in a booth here trying to offer a perspective of a game 8,000 miles away. I thought you guys did a terrific job.
Yeah, thank you. It's not ideal. Now, it's not the first time we've called games off TV though, right? Like
right.
I like for the 18 Olympics, I called the 4K feed for NBC from Connecticut. So same idea, you know, I was up in the middle of the night in a little sound booth and you do the best you can. There are things you missed. There are, you know, penalty calls you might not quite appreciate because you don't know exactly what they're doing, but you know, you do the best you can and offer up the experience as you can. But it is always better to be in the building, to feel the crowd, to feel the energy, to see the whole thing. So I know that costs are always a thing for broadcasters, but yeah, being in the building is better than not.
So I just found out this morning, I assumed, because I watched the Blue Jay game last night, I assumed that mm-hmm. Ben Wagner and Pat Tabler and Arash Madani were in Cleveland calling the game. Found out this morning that that wasn't the case. Ben was in Toronto. Pat and Arash were both in Cleveland. And like, so now it begs the question, if you're a television executive, are you not going, like, what do we need to send these people there when they can do a fantastic job calling it off monitors, fooling the audience?
See, that's the point, Hemsy. You got to be good, but not too good. you got to miss a thing or two. No, you're right. And I think, you know, the Remy technology that allows people to do this. And, you know, certainly over the last 2 years, the pandemic and restrictions, like we did a lot of crazy things. I called a game last year where Brian Mudrick was in Ottawa and I was in Toronto. And, you know, we were working together and because someone tested, like, you know, these things happen. But what I always say is that in a big moment, you need to be there. And so, yeah, you can get through a May game in Cleveland, but I've heard some of the calls about the guy, you know, missing home run calls because they think it's out and they don't know it's not in. Mm-hmm. It's stuff that you would never do when you're there. Or I always think if something really important happens or something maybe awful happens, like you kind of, to serve your viewers, you would need to be there to give that the right appropriate treatment. So, yeah, I know they have these conversations, but my vote is that we get to travel and get in the buildings.
Do you know if Bonesy and Jim Ralph are in Tampa doing radio, or are they still not traveling as they haven't been for 2 years for road games?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about the playoffs.
Wow.
So I don't want to speak out of turn, but I know they have done a lot of stuff from the sound booth in the TSN building or the Rogers building, wherever they were calling the games for. So, yeah. I'm not sure. I do find it interesting though. Apparently the Leafs took a bus to Buffalo.
Yeah. Everyone's doing
Buffalo
it.
As opposed to risking a rapid test where maybe you get a positive. So they're rather just like put their heads in the sand, I guess. Like there may be a positive player on the team, but we'd rather not know.
Right.
And just, you know, cause we can fly home without worrying about that stuff. And we'll just take the Buffalo bus ride and not ever have to worry about testing, which I get at this time of the year, although medically it seems, you know, a weird perspective to have that we'd rather not know someone who's positive around all these healthy people. But that's also part of the decision. Cause I know a lot of companies were worried about not necessarily just the cost of going down to the States to call games, but what happens if you test positive down there? Mm-hmm. And then you can't come home, and then you're on the hook for 10 days. And what, like all that kind of stuff has all been part of the discussion the last couple of years, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's nuts. Can you tell the story of, you and I did a thing for Bodog a while back, and I don't know, 8 people saw it or whatever, but can you tell, I mean, I was there, so I'm doing the games. Me and Joe Bowen are doing the games on radio when Mike joins the Maple Leafs. They sign him as a free agent, and he joins the team, and people are like, who is this guy again? Like, you know, free agent, mm-hmm. Rolling Green. And so the first road trip you're taking with the team, we're leaving out of a private airstrip on a charter right after the game. And you've just played your first game at Maple Leaf Gardens and ran into your family. Can you take the story from there?
Are you going to try to make me start sweating? Like, I'm already sweating. Just a mere mention of that evening. So, yes, I played one game in Tampa. Flew back to Ohio, got my car, my stuff, drove to Toronto, played my first game at the Garden, 100 family and friends, like a massive night. We lost badly. Eric Lindros had 4 goals. It was a welcome to the NHL kind of game. But they said, okay, we're going to fly out to Pittsburgh. Do you need a ride? I said, no, I live in Toronto. Just tell me the directions and I know how to get to the airport. I'll be fine. And so they say, okay, you go down to Renforth Drive and then you go to Silver Dart and you turn there and the hangar on the right. Okay, I can do that. Be there by 11:30. I leave the gardens at 10:30 to make sure I give myself plenty of time. I'm out around the at 11 o'clock. I'm at the airport looking for Silver Dart Drive. I'm on Renforth. Now, remember, this is 1997, so I don't have a cell phone. Nobody has cell phones, right? I don't have a GPS system. These things don't exist. I have a Perley's book, a yellow Perley's map book. Right. So I'm driving along, trying to find it. Can't see it. I'm going up and like, I'm down in residential neighborhoods. I'm like, clearly there's no plane in a driveway. I'm like, you know, I'm all over the place. I'm going through red lights. I'm speeding. I want to get pulled over because I want a cop to help me find this place. 11:20, 11:30, 11. And I'm dying. It's my first, like, I've never even met these guys. I've only played two games. Like, I don't even know these. Dying. 11:40, 11:45, 11:50. Finally, I like for look at the horizon and I swear to God, it's as big as a blimp. It says SO Habitat. It's like the biggest sign you've ever seen in your life. But it was the wrong road. Somebody gave me wrong directions. I was not looking for Silver Dart Drive. I was looking for Airplane Road, whatever it was called. Anyway, they go bombing in there. I think I have the right parking lot. I don't. I get out. I start trying to climb the fence. It's a chain link wire on the top. I'm like in a suit thinking, I can't do this. Like, I can't do this. Back in my car, go around. I go running into the actual terminal. The Raptors are walking home from a game in Detroit. Like, that's how late it is. They've already arrived back home. It's like midnight. Guy's on his little walkie-talkie. He's like, shh, shh. Yeah, guy's here. Leaf's here. I'm like, what's happening? He's like, hang on. They're gone. I'm like, oh, God. Oh, my God. They're gone. So now first thought is my car is making funny sounds, college car. I'm like, I don't think I can drive to Pittsburgh. I don't know if I'll make it. And then I'm like, I'm going to have to call my mom and dad and say, can you please buy me a plane ticket? Because I don't have any money yet. I'm in the NHL, but I have not been paid. Like, I don't have a credit card. I'm just a college student still. And then all of a sudden the guy goes, oh, they're coming back for you. Which at this point, I think is probably worse.
Wow.
So now
By the way, I'm on the plane. So I'm on this plane and everyone's going, where the fuck is Mike Johnson? Yeah, and Mike Murphy, the coach, is going, where is this fucking kid already? And he says to the pilot, let's go. To hell with them. Let's go.
And that's what I'm assuming everyone's doing. This little mother puke college signing bonus bait. Like, what the? That. And I'm like, oh, my God. So now I'm riding out on the pickup truck with the ladder. Like, I'm on the Titanic on the perch as this plane pulls up. And they open the door. I turn the corner and I am assaulted with a barrage of like, you little puke, you. So I just dive into a row of seats, cry, suck my thumb for a little bit. But Murph played me the next game.
Yep.
I scored my first goal in my NHL career. I got 2 points and it broke the ice with all my teammates. So in the end, it cost me $1,000 in a fine, but it felt like it was worth it.
And the trivia, the beautiful trivia is the goalie you scored on that night for your first National Hockey League goal, which I witnessed, and it was... You know, it wasn't the most gorgeous goal, but hey, what the hell, it was your first. You scored your last NHL goal, 127th NHL goal, against the same goalie. You were both playing for different teams. I think that's a great story. That's a great
piece. Patty Laleem, every year. He was on that great rookie run in Pittsburgh. He won his first 15 starts.
Fantastic.
And then at the end of I think he was in Buffalo and I was in St. Louis. So
No, Chicago. He was in Chicago. Tomorrow,
when I scored my last goal, was he in Chicago?
Come on, Mike. Kachuk got you the puck. Come on, Mike.
Yeah. One-timer, 4-4. I remember. So I guess it was Chicago. But the moral of the story is he clearly had a longer career than mine because he bookended both my start and my finish. So he obviously played more than I did.
There you go. It's a good piece of trivia. All right. Listen, before we let you go, because I know you got this show, you're working with Scotty Loughlin, right, on Sirius XM, right?
Yep.
Scotty's a good man. Give him my regards. All right, let's go over the other series. First of all, will Spezza play tonight instead of Simmons?
I don't think so. I think Keith is probably going to go back to game one. I'm not saying I would, but I think he will. I think game one went so well, not because Clifford, he barely played, but I just think that he will be inclined to go in that direction and then react if it doesn't go well throughout the game.
Okay, that's interesting. Let's go over the other series here. Oh, by the way, first of all, your pick on, like, it's 1-1. Obviously, Leafs have to get a split to go back to Toronto, but do you see Tampa losing either of the next two games? And if so, how do the Leafs beat them?
The same way they beat them in game one. The Leafs are a better 5-on-5 team. They have more speed. They're more team speed. They're a better 5-on-5 team. Take fewer penalties. Have Jack Campbell play some, not Vasilevsky-like, but, you know, well by his standards. And they should be okay. So, yeah, I have Leafs in seven. I'm not going to shy away from that just yet.
Yeah, I took Tampa in seven only because, well, because of the history of the Leafs. I know. And Tampa, yeah. and to knock off the two-time defending cup. It's like I watched Nadal play yesterday. And it's the same thing. This guy's a champion. You can't. You better put him away, or you're forget it. So they got to at least have to find a way to put these guys away, and that's not going to be easy. Pittsburgh Rangers 1-1. Who do you like in that series?
I Shesterkin more than Domingue. I mean, I think that's the answer. So they're pretty evenly matched. It's hard to bet against Sid, but just the goaltending disparity is just too great.
Yeah, Shesterkin won't be eating any spicy pork with broccoli.
No spicy
either,
pork and broccoli for him.
Florida Washington's 1-1 now. Do you give Washington a chance in this series?
I do, but Vanacek's got to be better. He wasn't great in game two. Bobrovsky's been pretty solid. Tom Wilson not playing is a very significant injury for Washington. I think I had Florida in six. Stay with Florida in six. They're going to find their game. They look more like themselves in game two, and that's a bad sign for Washington.
Yeah. And Carolina, look, no Freddie Anderson, but it doesn't seem to matter. They're a much better team than Boston.
I like the goalie who can't speak a lick of English, doesn't communicate with anyone, just got here. Rod Brindamore has no idea anything about him, but he looks like he's pretty comfortable. Yeah, that's going to be a five-game series. Boston will get one because they're a proudful group, but Carolina is just a bit better.
Yeah. In the West, Colorado needed overtime to beat Nashville in game two. So, and I picked Colorado to win the Stanley Cup at 8-1.
Yeah.
I just think they're just got so much power. So what is
McCarr, 21 shot attempts. Connor Ingram's not going to stop 51 of 53 again. So, Bridgestone's a great place to play, but Colorado's a better team.
Yeah. I like this St. Louis miniseries. I think this is going to go the limit. It's 1-1 right now. And there's not a lot between these two teams.
No, it's hard to choose. I mean, I think St. Louis has been better head-to-head this year. It's going to be tight. It's going to be very tight. And both teams have a legit chance to go deep. And they could beat Colorado next round. So hard to choose. I picked St. Louis before the series started, but it's a toss-up.
Yeah, I hope it goes seven. Calgary, Dallas, and Edmonton, LA, both 1-1. So, I mean, boy, I really like Calgary, but I don't know that game.
You don't
last night.
Watching that series, though, do you?
No,
that is boring. But terrible. But that's how Dallas wants to play it. Like that is getting played on Dallas's terms: low events, tighter margins, rely on a goaltender. They only get one line of scores anyways, but defend the hell out of the rest of the game. Calgary's got to find the next gear. They're still kind of playing at the Dallas's pace, and that's not good.
And as also, it's Daryl Sutter against Rick Bowness, man. Come on. That's like 7,000 games of playoff experience.
Hey, Bones is one of my favorite people.
I love Bones. I love him.
He is great, so I want him to do well.
Yeah, me too. And Edmonton, L.A. Well, if the Oilers can't do it against L.A.
They got it. They'll got it. As long as Mike Smith doesn't play the puck too much, they'll be just fine.
Okay, that's Agent Court Mike Johnson. He's got to get to his other gigs. Always a pleasure. Thanks so much, buddy, and best of luck.
All right, anytime. We'll talk soon. All right. See you, Toronto, Mike.
Cheers.
See you, buddy. Nice to meet you.
Mark that name. Terrible. Should have had it for me.
Agent Court Mike. I kind of like it. It's a good handle. We're gonna call him that from now. All right, that's Mike Johnson there. That was good, man.
I love that story about missing the flight there. That's a great story.
I'm on the plane, right? And it's like, when we're all in the waiting room, all the players are in the waiting room. They just got their asses kicked by Philadelphia, killed. They're waiting to go to Pittsburgh, right? It's Saturday night. What I mean?
Right.
And we're waiting for one guy. Right? And everyone gets on the plane. Where the fuck is this guy? We're looking. It's like, and then finally Mike Murphy just goes, everyone's on their seat. Mike Murphy goes, fuck this. And as you can imagine. And we're like, what are we fucking waiting for? Let's fucking go already. Because you can't eat your meal until you're in the air yet. They won't serve the meal. All that stuff. Let's go. Fuck. And who is this fucking guy anyway?
And he's college kid, right? So Bowling Green? Is that where you went? Bowling Green?
Yeah, Bowling Green.
So are you like me? Like, give me any guest, be it any podcast, be it Hebsy on Sports or whatever, give me one really good story. Like, I need one juicy story. Like, we've had a good run lately. We had the Dave Steve Cup story. Like,
yeah.
Bring that one golden story that we can tell our friends and family.
Oh, this is the one.
I know.
Drive it. Are you trying to climb a fence? Well, the team charter has left already. It's fucking down. We're down the runway. Mike Murphy just says, fuck it, let's go. He says, let's go to the pilot. We're not waiting. And I'm telling you right now, we're out at the end of the, we're out at the end there. We're about to, you know, it takes a while, right?
Right.
We're way out there. And then we're going to, coach. It's like this. It was like, coach. Yeah. He's, he's out. He's there. Okay, we're coming back like that. Murphy's like, oh fuck, all right, fuck it, because we were gonna go, and all the players, if I'm not mistaken, all the players are like, fuck it, let's go,
right,
find the guy, fuck it, let him find his own fucking way. Let's go. Everyone's like, come on, we want to go, because we've been waiting a good, I'm telling you, it was a half an hour waiting for Mike Johnson.
Oh man. So he talked about the books. We all had those books in our cars, the map art, whatever, the Pearlies or whatever. It was like playing
battle. I think there were cell phones in 1997, weren't there?
Not smartphones. Just flip phones.
Oh, not smartphones. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but you need to have the GPS and the
location. You could have picked up, you could have grabbed your phone, his cell phone, but he was a college kid. You know, from Cantel, and gone, listen, I'm looking.
Right. But those books were like playing Battleship. It was like, go to B11 or whatever.
I know. That was good stuff. All right. Let's talk a little golf here. Jason Day, your first round leader at the Wells Fargo Championship in Potomac, Maryland. 763 for a one-shot lead. Top Canadians, Mackenzie Hughes and Adam Svensson at -4. Nick Taylor -3. Drew Nesbitt of Shanty Bay, Ontario -2. Roger Sloan and Corey Connors at -1. Michael Gligic at +1. Gligic, he's from Burlington. We got to get him out to Crosswinds. Got to get Michael Gligic out to Crosswinds. And all the other Canadian pros if we can. That'd be good. But the thing is, what do they do on their day off? They don't go golfing. Their job, right? The last thing they want to do is play golf on their day off.
Right.
So it might not happen. We got to get them. Got to get them up to Burlington to Crosswinds. In tennis, the Madrid Open on clay. Canada's Felix Auger-Aliassime taking on Sasha Zverev in the quarterfinals this afternoon. It's a star-studded field. Novak Djokovic, Rafa Nadal, Stefanos Tsitsipas still in the mix. In fact, Nadal came back to beat David Goffin yesterday in thrilling fashion. I was mentioning this talking to Mike Johnson. Just, oh my God, he's Nadal. You better put him away. And today he gets the excellent young Spaniard, Carlos Alcaraz, who they're saying is like the next Nadal. No pressure, kid.
Wow.
You're the next Nadal.
Wow.
And he's a good player too. Right-hander, Spaniard. Tsitsipas and Andre Rublev also later today. On the ladies' side, both Leyla Annie Fernandez and Bianca Andreescu were eliminated in the second round earlier this week. Andreescu lost to American Jessica Pegula in straight sets. And it's the 12th seed Pegula into the finals today against Ons Jabeur of Tunisia, who is seeded 8th and defeated Andreescu last year in Montreal, I do believe. So the 8th seed and the 12th seed. You know what? You know the biggest difference between women's tennis and men's tennis, Mike, besides the obvious?
Besides the number of sets, yeah.
What? Is the fact that in women's tennis, a holding serve is key. And in men's tennis, breaking serve is key. That's the big difference. Holding serve is very...
Two sides of the same coin, right?
Very difficult. Very difficult. So you hold a tough hold. That's good.
Okay.
Right? That's good. There you go. More than 300,000 people flocking to Miami for this weekend's Formula One race, as we had mentioned. Expected to spend in excess of what they generated during the 2020 Super Bowl. That's huge. The average ticket, $2,179 U.S., more than three times the price of last year's Grand Prix ticket in Austin, Texas. Also tomorrow, the Run for the Roses, the Kentucky Derby, the first Saturday in May at Churchill Downs. Zandon, Epicenter, and Messier are the three top betting choices.
The hockey name.
Yeah, Zandon, the hockey player, yeah. And a field of 23-year-olds goes to the post just before 7 o'clock tomorrow
night. Who do you have? Are you going to put any dollars, any Bodog dollars on this thing?
I don't think so. I used to be a huge fan. I haven't followed it at all. Oh, watch the race.
Sure.
I might put a couple shekels down. I might.
Have you picked a horse yet?
Mike, I've been busy with other stuff, man.
All right, I'll hook you up with Peter Gross. He's got some insight.
Real Madrid winning yesterday over Manchester City, who choked, the worst choke job ever. Ever. You heard what happened to that game?
I only saw this on Twitter and people were losing their mind.
Aggregate in the 90th minute. Okay, Rodrigo scores, the substitute Rodrigo for Real Madrid. They're down 5-3. He scores in the 90th minute. It's 5-4. He scores in the 91st minute. It's now 5-5 on aggregate. And then in the 95th minute, okay, Benzema on a penalty wins it. Okay, scores the go-ahead goal, and they end up winning it. Three goals to come. Man City had it locked up 5-3 on aggregate in the 90th minute.
Can you do a comparison for me? I know this is impossible, but would that be like blowing a 5-0 lead with 10 minutes left in a hockey game?
Yeah. Yeah. It would.
That's unbelievable, because that's worse than that 4-1 against Boston we keep remembering.
Well, considering the magnitude of the game, a Champions League semifinal?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I mean, mind you, there was one like sort of similar to that. Not really, but kind of similar when Tottenham was down by 3 goals to Ajax in the semifinals in the Champions League a few years ago. And Lucas Moura scored 3 times, but he scored in like the 55th minute, the 58th minute, and the 90th minute.
Extra time. That's unbelievable.
All in added or extra time. Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy.
Wow.
And there you go. That's it for the sports. Episode 283 of Hebsy on Sports is in the books. Thanks so much to Toronto Mike for production and inspiration. Hit him up at Toronto Mike and listen to his excellent podcast. Not to be confused with Agent Court Mike. And we want to thank him. That's our special guest today, Mike Johnson, heretofore be known as Agent Court Mike. So thanks to him. And also thanks very much to our executive producer, Toronto Scott. That's Toronto Scott Allen. Thanks for his executive production skills there. I'm Little Hebsy here, and thanks for listening to the podcast, and thanks for allowing us into your headspace. Back with another exciting episode next week, when our guest will be the third man in the Blue Jays TV booth for the last 30 years.
I know who this is.
Has this guy got stories to tell? 30 years in the TV booth for Blue Jays. Scott Carson joins us next week.
Sorry to talk over that. I was going to say he's a great Twitter follower. So I follow him on Twitter, and I know this name because I've been hearing, you know, Tom Cheek and Jerry Howard say this name. Like, I know this name.
He's the Harpo Marx of baseball broadcasters.
Exciting.
You never hear him speak. Well, he's going to speak next week.
Woo!
Until then, have a great weekend. So long for now.